Now, the shotgun start in golf is full of mathematics. There's a lot of setup work that we have to do in order to make a tournament work. So I'm going to demonstrate to you just exactly how we do a shotgun start here.
And here we go.
All right, all right, all right. Gentlemen, start your engine!
Greetings and welcome to a Wednesday edition of the Shotgun Start. It is May 4th. Andy, how we doing?
Brendan, I'm doing well. You know, I'm having one of those days where, you know, just things aren't going your way. You know, you I got two lefts today. But you know, my headphones almost just like flew off my head, you know, and but anyways, I'm excited for this divergence.
Yeah, you're fumbling around there. You know what I just realized? I said May 4th. It's going to be that this dumbass Star Wars things. May the 4th be with you. I can't stand that stuff. Like I've said, I just realized Wednesday we're going to be getting Yoda and all this other
Going after all the Star Wars fans. Brendan.
Well, unfortunately, there's not a lot of them out there. You know, it's a very small minority of the world's population out there that's into Star Wars. Not that popular. I've never seen those. Have you? I mean, I've seen the old ones, the 80s.
I've seen the old ones. I don't know what I've. I don't know what and what I have.
What's what? Who are the characters? Where they come and go?
I feel like they like went out of order, and I think that's the whole problem.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's like I've seen the old ones, and I think that they're the end.
Yeah.
I'm not positive. Do not come at me, but I think they're the end. Once I'm at the end, I don't need to know what the start is.
Well,
I have this bad habit.
You're not into that.
If I start a show, no matter how awful it is, I need to finish it. I need to see the end. I need the conclusion. I need to know what happened. It drives my wife nuts.
Yeah.
But once I'm at the end, I have no use for the start.
I have that problem with books. I can't quit a book, which even if it's so bad. Anyways, you got to know the start.
There's nothing worse than when you're reading a book that you loathe.
You know sucks. Yeah.
And it's just you need to read it.
Yeah. I'll say we're not casting aspersions on people who are into Star Wars. I know many really good, cool, normal people, great friends of mine who are into that. I'm just not personally. I don't know what's going on. But either way, for all those who are fans, May the 4th be with you.
What a save. And like I said, if Star Wars started at the start, I probably would have watched all of them. But they didn't. They started at the end. And I have no use for the start now.
Yeah. All right, let's get into it. What do you want? Do you want to talk about yesterday? We played golf at the same course.
Everybody wants to hear about yesterday, right?
We played golf at the same course, but not together. Thanks to some sort of snafu, we showed up. One of us was on the list. One of us was not.
I don't think any of us were on the original list.
What does that mean?
When I went to check in, I wasn't. Neither of us were on the list.
Oh, really? And they just threw
they
me
got,
on.
Then
quickly?
They got you. They got you on. They appeased you.
I didn't know about any of this. What was happening? So we didn't play together.
I played. To be fair, we missed the deadline to register, and we went through some back channels.
Here we go. That's all right. All right. I was wondering. I was talking to Tron. I played with the No Laying Up voice. I was like, yeah, I don't know. And then I'm on the tee, and you're telling me, wait, we might have an open spot. So I thought I was going to run away from those guys to join with you. And Tron at one point goes, is this like performance art with Andy at this point? What's going on? I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, it was kind of a mix-up. Either way, we had a great day at the country club, Brookline, Massachusetts. Do you have any key takeaways? It's May. We got another month and a half-ish to go.
I've got a lot of takeaways. I'm excited. There's some really fun shots out there. There's going to be a lot of thick rough.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if you picked up on that.
Yes, I picked up. I found it a few times and then worked to advance my ball.
I spent some time out there last fall. And this trip, it gave me a little bit more respect for the golf course, how it fits together.
Okay.
Obviously, it's weird because you're playing kind of two different courses. You're skipping certain holes. You're going over to these other holes. There's, you know, one of the strangest championship things ever is how they play on the Primrose. It's usually the Primrose number one. It'll be the 13th hole for the championship. You play over the first green to the second green at the Primrose, on the Primrose course. This has historically been, I played with the club president. I asked him, when did this start happening and how did it start happening? He didn't know. He's like, it's just been, this is the way it's worked for a long time.
I was so flummoxed because I started on 10 and like, that's right when they start, you get in the mixing bowl of these different nines and this composite sort of deal. And the rest of the day, I was like, sort of like trying to figure it out, scratching my head. You play a green on a hole is part of the fairway. Is that accurate to say? Part of the fairway of the hole that will be in the U.S. Open championship routing. Is that accurate? Yeah. Yes. So you're like, the green just becomes a part of the fairway. You play over that green to the next green.
It's like a short par four that becomes a longer par four because it's a short par four followed by a short par three over water.
Yep.
So now then it's just like kind of a mid-length par four to a green over water, but you play directly over the actual first green. It's really odd.
We'll have video and explainer of it, I'm sure, as the U.S. Open draws near. But that was certainly a takeaway of mine at the beginning. It's going to be good. It was already pretty thuddy, firm. I know. It's going to be pretty good shape. So,
I think just if you want a big key takeaway about what's cool about Brookline is that I think Brookline does a really good job showcasing golf in Boston. With its unique landforms, it's got these rock outcroppings all over the place. It's got, you know, it's just a dramatic place. And you just think about New England at its core ethos, right? You think about New England as a place. It was like this place that was all about like kind of discovery for when, you know,
it got big colonized. Here. Thematic. Yeah. Yeah.
And this is a golf course where it's got some quirks. It's got some unique aspects to it. And I hate the word quirky is kind of like a buzzword.
Has a negative connotation, right? In course architecture.
It does. And the championship routing is far less quirky than the actual like regular course routing. Cause it kind of like makes it more of a brutish standardized test, but you've got these really dramatic moments throughout the round where you're carrying over and there's a lot of like hodgepodge architecture. It's a mud. It's not a, is not a purebred golden age. Like, you know, this isn't Donald Ross at the height of his powers or Tillinghast at the height of his powers. There's a lot of influences that went into this golf course. It changed a ton over the years, but you have and that's what I think the way I would describe its quirkiness is that you have all these different themes going on. You have these little chocolate drops around the greens. But then you have these really dramatic moments where you're teeing off a rock outcropping and you have to decide, do I hit it over to the left and hit it down like the, you know, where I can see, or do I hit it over the rock outcropping on the right? And then from there, you're from down at the bottom and you're hitting up back into another rock outcropping. I'm describing the 10th hole for anybody that's the championship 10th hole, which was your first hole, which is a really standout hole out
there. Ease the way into the day with a nice little eight on my first hole at the 10th, trying to figure it out. But yes.
But overall, I think that's the thing that I love about the golf course is that it's got this sense of adventure. And you're having to conquer the topography along with the championship pressure and conditions that are going to be presented.
And there's some topographical elements that I think will frustrate the best in the game that, you know, Gil Hanse was on the fried egg on Friday talking about predictability. If I hit it over and over, I mean, there's just some blindness or just some different topographical
blindness.
Elements that will, I think, make it interesting to watch the best in the world play.
And it's a cool journey. Like you start, if you put tee off one, you start in what used to be the old racetrack, like a horse racetrack. arena. So it's like this very flat area.
Yeah.
And then from two, you start your way out of it and you get into this like rocky outcropping, really rumpled ground area where it gets super dramatic. So you're in that area from two green all the way through to really 15 tee.
That's almost like you're in a state park, like a rocky state park kind of thing. Uh-huh. If there wasn't a golf course, it would be like a state park kind of thing. Go ahead.
And when you drive around New England, that's the kind of the feeling you evoke, right?
Right.
This is like now like a Friday.
We're getting deep into the course. Yeah. But go ahead.
But then you come back and you play down into 15. You play down back into that flat area. And 15, 16, 17, 18 have some really big dramatic features with their bunkers. And the greens are have a little bit more going on in them. You know, a lot of the greens at the country club have severe slopes, but that's because they're benched into really severe slopes themselves. So they're just kind of sitting on the natural land. It's a cool course. It could be an ass kicker, right? Yeah, it's going to be hard. It's going to be a lot of thick rough too. I'm not really thrilled with some of the narrowing that the USGA did. It's like they love to thump their chest these days about how they're not trying to, you know, manufacture a score. Then why are you narrowing fairways? Like that is strictly done to manufacture a score. So I don't agree with some of that. But at the end of the day, it's a really cool place and I like how, you know, if you're at the country club, you know, you're in Boston. I think that's a neat thing about a golf course is that it really showcases the place that it's in. If you go play George Wright, a very popular municipal, you'll see a lot of those same themes that you play at the country club with the dramatic rocky topography. One thing I'm really, really keen to see.
Okay.
This is a topic I brought up with the club president at length.
Oh God.
They have the 14th hole, which is going to get a lot of chatter about the par five. It's a brute par five. It's like 640 uphill. And it plays up this rock outcropping. And the club has a double flag there, an extra tall flag stick, which I find preposterous. Nothing offends my senses more than when a club invokes a double flag because of a blind shot. If you play there every day, it's not blind. And B, if you play there every day and you bring a guest, one of the coolest things is having home course advantage. You shouldn't have a double high flag because if you bring guests there and you want to win, everybody wants to win. This is a take.
Is this a real take? I thought you were just trying to give the club president throw him for a loop.
Andy gets in his element.
It doesn't matter who you are. If it's your club, there's a story at Augusta. You were walking with a prim and proper member. You're talking about the restrooms, how they're great they are. Didn't want to hear about that. You like it throwing these guys for a loop. So the club president.
I do like this. I like seeing the reaction.
These guys high places.
When you tell somebody something that they did not expect to hear from somebody. When everybody tells you how great something is, when you pick out something and fixate on it, and it's just fun. I was talking to the club president about how we needed to make this a key point of his reelection campaign, and he turned
double
to me
flag.
And said, Andy, I don't want to be reelected. I'm done after the open. I said, well, you got to give me a list of the candidates running. But anyway,
they could run on a campaign to get rid of the double flag.
Okay. I'm curious, is the USGA going to use the double flag? I'm going to say they aren't. It looks preposterous. It's so absurd. Double flags should not be anywhere on golf courses.
How'd you play? You were doing your hipster stuff. You had your persimmon and your throwback stuff, right?
Listen, I did this for a reason, okay?
I know.
We go to these media days, and this is not a trying to be a humble brag at all. We go to these media days and you play the media tees. They're set up for like everybody in the field. You got a wide range of golfers, okay? I'm not like crazy long, but I hit the ball 300 yards. And if I play up there, all I do is hit wedges.
Yeah.
So
you're getting no sense of what the course is. I don't want to.
Yeah. So I played with a persimmon driver, so I knocked 30 yards off my tee shot. And if I didn't hit it really solid, then I had, you know, maybe 50 yards short of where it would have been if with my modern. So what it does is it makes it more relatable. I hit a lot of mid irons yesterday, which was fun. That's the thing. That place, like, you're rarely playing like a flat yardage. It's not like Wingfoot, where like everything's pretty much yardage on the ground is the yardage into the green, right? It's it's a lot of, and you know, you got to be careful of a lot of false runs. But yeah, it was fun. I drove it really well. I didn't play great outside, but I drove it great.
Great. Fantastic. Good day.
That's the
good
key. That's going to be the key out there. Driving it well. Driving well out there.
Yep. As a
and what happens with the double flag? What's going to happen with that double flag?
That's a critical point of emphasis. All right. Well, thanks again for that little debrief. We had a good day. Thanks to No Laying Up Boys, good company. Club President, good company. So it was always fun to get involved with those. All right.
I think the club president was supposed to be playing with Stu Francis, so he got like really severely downgraded when he got me instead of Stu Francis.
Well, who's this guy that's not on the list? Oh, let's just put him with the, yeah. Instead of the executive whatever of the USGA, you got this guy bugging you about double flags. So
I feel bad for my boy Lyman, you know.
All right, let's get to it. The schedule for the week. Excuse me. On the PGA Tour, we have the Wells Fargo Championship. That is Thursday through Sunday at TPC Potomac at Avenel Farm in Potomac, Maryland. My current town, where I reside.
Right by Cabin John.
Where you're from. It abuts Cabin John at certain points. Par 70, 7,100 yards. The purse is $9 million. Defending champ is Rory McIlroy, but that was, of course, at Quail Hollow. 1.62 to the winner. Notables in the field. Abraham Ancer, Paul Casey, Corey Connors, Jason Day, Tony Finau, Sergio Garcia, Roy McIlroy, Francesco Molinari, Patrick Reed, Webb Simpson, Matthew Wolf. I think it's pretty straightforward notables, if you ask me. This is the usual Golf Channel and CBS split. You do not need me to get into the specifics of that. You know, it's Eastern time zone, 1 to 6 kind of ish. I hope to get over there. It's 10 minutes away. I plan to get over there for the DC area folks.
Let me ask you, can I ask you a question? If it was an hour and 10 minutes away, would you be hopeful that you could get over there?
Like if it was the Caves Valley, that's like closer to an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, unless I was obligated to file daily columns for the Friday. I don't know. I don't want to dump on
Caves
it.
Valley, you got a playoff event.
Yeah. Yeah,
a lot. I was also like, as being much told as we malign the playoffs, right. They got a little bit more juice. This is just like last week, really. When you start to dive in, it's a little bit better. It's a little better. It's got more depth, but again, it's just this stretch of golf, man. From the Masters, it's just like it's not bad. It's worse than the fall series.
But what should they do? What do you do? What do you do to string it from one to the next? I was trying to get creative and think of that, and then you're just like you're making up preposterous things. Like I don't know.
Here's the thing. If there were, we've got right after we got the Heritage, good field, right?
Yeah.
Then we went to Zurich. Then we got Mexico, and we've got this, and we've got Colonial. So we got 5 events, right?
Yep.
If there were
Nelson, right?
Or is it Nelson, not Colonial? Colonial's after. Yeah. So Nelson. Yep. That's going to be an awful field.
TPC Craig Nelson. All right.
Scheffler's playing, which is, you know, a big deal. Yeah. But and Spieth will play because of AT&T. Yep. So that'll be. But if we pared that down from 5 to 3, how much better would the 3 be? The Heritage
marginally?
Was a good.
Not a lot.
I think we'd have 3 Heritage fields.
Maybe
Heritage was a good field for a regular event.
you think they consolidate a little bit more. You might have Rahm and Rory this week as opposed to Rahm last week and Rory this week.
You know, I've been working on a big article, and you start to look at like players, and it's like crazy. I was looking at it's. I did this pod with Shane Bacon about the 10 best players of the last 10 years. I'm writing it up.
Look forward to editing it.
Yes, it's a beast. It's like 3,000 words. I'm all sorry. Right. but you start to look at like Bubba. Bubba played in like consecutive years. He went like 22, 21, 22, 21, 22, 21 starts. These guys play a finite amount, and they want to play a certain amount between majors to stay sharp. Yeah. But we're force feeding this golf in here. And every week, what it does is just dilutes the overall, you know, having so many options then creates an event like last week, where if you took John Rahm out of that event, it was an opposite field event. Like,
so as you were reading off that schedule, though, I was thinking, like, these are places where professional golf should go and visit. New Orleans, Mexico. I don't know about that part of Mexico, like that resort style deal. Washington, D.C. should have an event, especially for the diversity of the game. It doesn't really have an event. This is just a one-off deal. How do we marry that with less events? With like New Orleans, like, should have a great event. That should be a diverse, flourishing, sporting like event for the community. And as much as we bang on the sort of how you know just ma and blah it is, and potentially this week will be, I guess it's hard to reconcile like that it's a bad thing that professional golf is attempting to go to these markets.
Listen, there's 32 cities that the NFL plays in.
Yeah.
You could make an argument they should be in more, but they aren't. And I think, like, obviously I can't have it both ways, but one of the advantages that the tour has is that they can do one-off events and they can go to different places. And a lot of their sponsors are global companies.
Right.
You know, these are big companies. Yeah. And look what they've done to my Western Open. Look what they've done to it.
My beautiful Western Open. My beautiful
look at what
boy.
My beautiful boy.
Look what they've done to my beautiful.
And, you know, it sucks for Chicagoan what they've done to it, but they've also brought a premier event to a lot of new markets. They go to Denver, they go to Caves Valley, they get into the valleys. They're going to Philly effectively this year. But I think that's the thing, is that, you know, a little bit less would mean a little bit more, I rotate think also.
It. Yeah,
you know,
fewer events, rotate around. Yeah. Yeah.
It also, I think when you look at the overall health of the game, other things going on, you know, you've got right now things that get really kind of blurred out. College golf. We've had a really awesome run on the LPGA. And when you look at the overall game, and I know that like the tour might not be just necessarily, you know, the tour is trying to drive more revenue, trying to grow more. And that's their objective. And they're trying to provide more playing activities or playing opportunities for members. But you also give these other aspects of the game, and whether you notice it or not, like the health of those areas of golf have a long-term and long-tail impact on the PGA Tour's health and success.
Yep. Yep.
So I think that that's the answer, is that when you look at this, like, you know, it's a crazy time in the schedule. It's a I know, and I don't want to, you know, this is not, I do not want sympathy for myself, but it's a crazy time in the year for golf writers and golf people that are in the golf industry.
Oh God.
Just like the players, like this is their busy. This is this is when you make hay in golf, is this time of year, and having a little bit less, I think, would go a long way in terms of the quality. Cause like, I don't think it's good for like a casual viewer to turn on the TV and have some of these, like, who the hell is this moment? Like, yeah. I think that it's more valuable for you to have a little bit less, but be like, oh, I got to turn on the TV because, you know, Rory, Spieth, Scheffler, and Rahm are playing, as opposed to who's playing this week? Oh, no, I'm not turning that on.
Like Kitayama versus Rom?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just my general take. I think a lot of people would disagree with that. But, you know, I just think that if you look at the most successful sports out there now, there is some scarcity to them.
Well, I was going to encourage everyone in the area to go because it's, you know, we don't get a professional event in D.C. You know, it's not D.C. proper, but, you know, close enough. But it looks like the weather's going to be awful. Just going to be soaking all 4 days, 5 days in a row, just a lot of rain. So hopefully it goes off well. You know, you want it to, you know, I want it to do well locally, but I don't know. It's just not a strong field. And we know it's not coming back. You know, it's like a thing that's here for a year and then it's gone.
Rory's defending his title.
He is. I have a few thoughts about Rory. As we always do. He signed a multi-year extension with TaylorMade. I don't want to say I'm like mad. I'm just a little disappointed. Not because I don't have anything against TaylorMade. His new irons are TaylorMade. So that's what came out of the bag.
It's
club champion. But like, I don't know. He talks with the Saudi Arabia stuff. I'm not equating the funding or money at all. That's not what I'm doing. He talks about the Saudi Arabia stuff like I still use the same three rooms in my house, no matter how much money I have. And like, wouldn't you just want, like, what matters to him? Like this extra cash or the flexibility and freedom to not have to play a new driver every January or to not have to play a certain driver or to be able to switch balls? Or I just think he's at the point of his career where like, this should not matter and as much and should, and, but I mean, Tiger still does it and Tiger's made everything. The way Rory talks, I think it's inconsistent a little bit with the way Rory talks about chasing cash. I
like this take a lot. And I think that with Rory, we should be at the point in his career. Look what, I mean, and I'm always kind of somebody that pokes at LeBron. But what LeBron did later in his career was he maximized his championship opportunities by signing short-term contracts. Now, they really hurt the long-term hopes of those teams because it was championship or bust. And, you know, but it put pressure on those organizations to put title contending teams around LeBron. And I don't understand why Rory isn't at a position in the sport where he could sign a lucrative short-term contract on an annual basis with his equipment sponsors. True. Look at what the Masters does. The Masters CBS does this incredibly well. They sign one-year agreements with their partners. Just because you're the partner this year doesn't mean you're a partner next year. And what happens? They get better performance out of that because of that. Yeah. And I don't understand why Rory, like you said, at this point, doesn't approach his career as, you know, I've made so much money. I've set up future generations of my family for, you know, and at this point, I understand more majors. Like, that's the other thing about it. Winning more majors makes him exponentially more money mm-hmm. at this point. If he could get to seven majors, he would be, you know, probably considered the best player since Tiger Woods. And why he isn't making decisions about his equipment, which is a very large part of your performance as a golfer, around maximizing his chances of winning major championships, is a bit of a head scratcher, because at the end of the day, the more relevant and the longer relevance he has as a golfer is going to dictate his future earnings potential on and off the golf course.
Yep. Now, maybe he thinks he has perfectly found the balance between, like, this is maximizing and it is maximizing both profit and my potential because I've done it and I know their stuff and I'm happy with it. I'm not doing an ad read here, but what is incontrovertible is that he's lost flexibility if that were to change. You know, mm-hmm.
And who knows what's going to change in the next 5 years?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and he could, I don't know. anyways, I just found it inconsistent a little bit with some of the talks, how he talks about money and what it matters to him. So, all right, that's it. Do you have one and done pick for Wells Fargo?
Yeah, I'm going with my boy. He's been really close. You know, the Irish golf fans have really gotten on me about my slander, my Seamus Power slander.
Oh, no, really?
Listen, this is a weak field. I enlightened everybody about my my one and done league, how the website shows things. This guy's the 10th highest ranked player in the field, Seamus Power. He's up to 40 in the world. He started the year 70th. He's been in the hunt a lot. He's been in the mix a ton. And usually when guys get in the mix a lot, a win is coming. And okay. Seamus Power, he's pretty accurate off the tee, which is a big thing at TPC Potomac there. There's a lot of water out there. There's just a lot of trouble out there. And think about some guys that have played well at Potomac, Francesco Molinari. Yep. Super accurate guy off the tee. Zach Blair was
Zach
in the mix.
Zach Blair. I was wondering if you're going to throw that out there. All right.
Joely D has played well. He's an accurate tee to green player. Tiger, in his older age, you know, he drove the ball really well that year at Potomac. So you start to look at how you might want to profile. I was thinking through my head, like, of guys that have contended and been in the mix there. And you start to look and it's like, okay,
Kyle Stanley.
Yeah.
Accurate. Didn't he win there?
Yep. Yeah. Accurate driver. Yep. Accurate drivers of the golf ball are a big deal there. So I'm going with Seamus Power. I was looking, you know, there's not a ton of star power. Like if I hadn't have already taken Abe Anser, he'd be one that I'd look at. Matty Fitz would be another one that I'd look at, just because those are guys that keep the ball in play. Big Leash. Guy
Big
that
Leash
can take it.
Very, he's a lot of buzz around Big Leash this week.
You can, guy that can use all parts of the field. You gotta like those guys.
Just you kind of aim the ball, right? Aim it off the bat. Just knows where he's going. all right, I'm gonna go.
How about you?
I'm torn between the two Rorys, a past champion at this venue, Rory Sabatini, and the defending champion at another venue, Roy McIlroy. It's a real.
I think Sabo's a good pick.
It's the Sophie's choice. I think Sabo is a good pick. He's just been hurt. I'm going to go with... it's a toss-up. I didn't have a decision coming into this.
Well,
I'm gonna go
I think the case for Rory is similar to the one I laid out for Rom last week. McIlroy. Rory McIlroy is, hands down, it's not really close, the best player in this field.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that if you've got him available, he's not really the most reliable majors player. That's a good spot to use him because he's a lot better than everybody here. Like if he plays bad, he's probably going to finish T15.
I'm going with the Rory McIlroy. It's going to rain in Potomac all week. And Potomac the last time he won by whatever 10 shots at the U.S. Open right down the street at Congressional, literally down the street.
Do you think he's staying in John's cabin this week?
It's Cabin John. So it could be a guy named Cabin's bathroom, you know, right? As opposed to John's
it
cabin.
It could be.
Maybe it's Cabin's bathroom. You don't know.
I kind of lament the fact that John, as a term for bathroom, has left society.
It kind of has, yeah.
Like that's what my grandpa used to call it. Are you going to the
job? Oh yeah.
And I miss that. I miss that.
That was the big sensitivity. Apparently they call it the Jake, like in England or something. And so when it was Jacob's Field, you say, I'm going to the Jake. They were like the Indians at the time was their name. Were very sensitive to people calling it the Jake because it meant bathroom. But yeah, the John, we need to bring that back into at least the American lexicon. All right, that does it. Let's do for the TPC, whatever, Wells Fargo. Let's do an ad read for our friends who hosted us yesterday.
The USGA.
Their handicap system.
Might need to edit some in the beginning of the pod.
Why? Because they didn't have you on the list? Maybe they didn't have you on a list because you weren't have a full established handicap index yet.
That's
true. Do you have one? No?
I do.
You're working on it.
I have signed up for a handicap index. I can't tell you how easy it is. I've This is a little breaking news, but
this
I'm
is
moving.
Not the ad read.
You're... I'm moving. Oh, I'm moving states. Right. That's all I'm going to say at this
yeah,
time.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, we'll save that for another time.
Yeah. But one of the things is that Illinois is on like a different system. It has been forever than forever. And, you know, everybody's got this GIN number. And
an index, handicap index.
Handicap no. index. And we've been on a different system forever. And everybody always asks me for my number. And I'm like, I don't have one. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
So anyways, I went on. This was delightful. I signed up.
Do?
I'm a new handicap. I went on the USGA website.
Okay.
USGA.org. And I signed up for a handicap. It just
what
like
what was it like 40 bucks, 30 bucks, 30 to 50 bucks, something like that, right? It's not too much.
Yeah.
Not crazy.
Yeah, not crazy. It's cheap. I have a real handicap, official one. I don't have an index yet. I'm not indexed yet because I haven't entered enough scores. I've entered 2 scores.
You need 3
I don't
scores.
Always keep
it could be
score.
A composite. It could issue. Be 9 holes. A few 9 holes, 9 holes, 9. I think you need a total of 3 scores to establish your handicap index. I don't know, just so you'll get it. You're on your way here to getting one.
I think
back.
I need 4 scores for it to be like a simulated index. Okay. I believe. Okay. And I'm halfway there. I've played two events where I kept score and I've entered those scores. So
you need 3 18 hole rounds comprised of 9 and or 18 hole scores. So I don't know. I think like I had one, then I didn't have one for a decade, and then I needed one for a few events. I'm playing in something on Friday, which I had to have an index, handicap index. I had to have it. Great invite from a friend. And like he's like, you got to have one. I would have been up a creek if I didn't have it. So it's not expensive. It's easy to get now. Times have changed is basically the point. When I had one before and I left the place where I was keeping it, I was like, I don't have a home. I have nowhere to do this. I have nowhere to keep a handicap index. Now it's very easy to go online. It's a way to represent yourself and your golf game. And obviously, when you play with family, friends, kids, a broad spectrum of people, it kind of can put everybody on a competitive playing field and make the day more fun. So you can go to USGA and find out.
Yeah, Will.
Where to
I mean,
find
Will's
out.
Been Will's been accusing me of sandbagging events.
I was getting accused significantly yesterday by Tron calling me the bandit. The Russian was our caddy and said he was the greatest 12 I've ever seen in my life on the country.
Might be the testament to those new sticks.
It could be. Is this a double ad read for Club Champion?
No, this isn't. No, but
I hit some real golf shots.
The best way to avoid being called a sandbagger is having a real, honest handicap.
Yeah, I honestly used to just show up and say, like, give me one a hole. And then when I didn't have an handicap index, now I have a real number to show people. All right. And I would, be accused of being
I think
sandbagger.
The thing I'm excited about at this point in my life, I have a high variance of scoring. Used to be a lot more consistent.
Good. Yeah.
And, you know, like what happens is I play with people and sometimes they're like, there's no way. You know, I usually just say I'm a zero. There's no way you're a zero in a bad way. And then other days they'll be like, there's no way you're a zero the other way. And now I'm going to be able to say I am this.
Yep. It makes everything easier. And now I guess the point is it's super easy to get as opposed to, you know, recently or, you know, last decade or so, it could be hard. There's access. All right, let's move on. We're continuing on with our schedule for the week we did the PGA Tour at TPC Potomac. Should we do the Champions Tour at TPC Sugarloaf?
I don't think so.
You don't want to do that one.
Stephen Elker,
Duluth,
favorite.
Georgia, Mitsubishi, the sugar daddy of the Champions Tour at TPC Sugarloaf, Mitsubishi Electric Champion. Par 72, 7,100 yards, 1.8 million.
Why are
defending
we
champ is Dickie Pride, and that's on just Saturday.
That's notable.
That's why we're talking about it. So I can get off Dickie Pride's defending his title. All right. That's your
now,
Champions
now
Tour.
I pull back all my...
We got a Dickie Pride mention. It. On the DP World Tour, we have the Betfred British Masters. This is at the Belfry. designed by Dave Thomas of Wendy's fame, and Peter Alice. Par 72, 7,200 yards, 1.85 British pounds sterling.
It's amazing that Dave Thomas was building an iconic cheeseburger, hamburger franchise while also designing courses that have hosted the Ryder Cup. I mean, not enough stuff, not enough is talked about Dave Thomas.
What a renaissance man, really. Building golf courses and fast food joints, I think, out of Ohio.
Do you think there's a Wendy's near the Belfry?
No, I don't think there's. Is Wendy's an international deal outside of the U.S.? Our international listeners probably aren't familiar with Wendy's. Maybe they are. I don't know. Put your French fries in the Frosty kind of thing. All right, the defending champ is Dick Bland. There's no.
Is he back?
He's playing. Dick Bland, RCB, Thomas Dietrich, Nikolai Højgaard, Horsfield.
Can we talk about something real quick?
Shinholt. Westwood is playing, and Danny Willett. You know, this is the British Masters. They try to get those Brits to actually play. What do you want to talk about? Coffee golf.
How, like, a year and a half ago, Dick Bland was just this, like, fun story to talk about, like, this obscure guy.
Yeah.
And now he's in all the majors. He's a top 50 player in the world.
He's, like, what is it, 47?
48.
48? Okay.
It's just a wild.
Went on a run at Austin, right? WGC.
Match it's just play. Absurd.
Yeah. So that'll be coffee golf. Other tours, we have the Simmons Bake Open in College Grove, Tennessee. The Let is in Madrid. And the Epson Tour is in Tucson, Arizona. You want notable birthdays this week?
Yeah.
Brooksy today, Tuesday. Rory, Wednesday. Saturday is Jay Monahan made the notable birthdays.
No. So, Where are you getting this schedule
for the week. I had never seen this. It's at the bottom. Happy birthday to Big J.
All right, that does it for
our schedule for the week. News. Greg Norman. Do you have these quotes? He's out there. He talked to ESPN.com. Mark Schlabaugh, I believe, was the writer. And he came out and said, you know, we really got put on our ass by the Phil Mickelson excerpt that published on the Fire Pit Collective when they threw that log in the pit. That really put the Saudi Golf League on its ass, or whatever it's called, Live Golf Invitational, on its ass. They were ready to go, is the, you know, sort of intimation from this article. You know, a bunch of guys like said, here's your money back. I'm not doing it. We were ready to launch. This is a quote. We were ready to launch on Tuesday or Wednesday of Genesis Week. We had enough players in our strength of field or minimal viable product ready to come on board. And while all of that happened, everybody got the jitters and the tour threatened people with lifetime bans and stuff like that. So, we still have players under contract and signed, he said, but those that wanted to get out because of the pressure, the tour gave back their money and got out. Guys had money in their pockets.
So one Adam Woodward for Golf Week wrote this
Woodard.
Up.
Woodard.
Woodard.
Yeah, not Bob Woodward's kid, but Woodard. Well, that's one less W.
For some reason, I always...
That's a hard one.
Read it. I've met him. He's a great guy. I had dinner. Had dinner with him at a Masters.
T-Bones.
Talked to him a lot. He's across the way. my bad. Sorry, Adam. Anyways, he pointed out in his write-up, this is great. While Norman says the launch was going to happen on Tuesday the 15th or Wednesday the 16th, Mickelson's alarming quotes and Shipnuck's story didn't post until the 17th.
I was wondering about that when I just read that right now. Did he mean Tuesday or Wednesday after Genesis? Right? It seemed like they were trying to get through Genesis because that doesn't work with the publication of the comments. So interesting. I don't know. It's so it adds.
I mean, this is. I think this is what we had been hearing too. I mean, I was hearing from people on the ground that were, you know, both playing and were, you know, associated with the event, that there were players actively campaigning on putting greens, like out in the open, talking about this on like the practice putting green at Riviera, talking about why so-and-so needed to join the Saudi League. I do believe that this whole Shipnuck story kind of burst it open. Norman, a few weeks ago, said that he thought that Shipnuck worked with the tour to release that thing.
He did.
Norman made that. Yeah, he made that accusation. But like that thing at that moment, I mean, you go back and I think about what we were talking about. Like that week, it was happening. You know, all the tea leaves read one way, and I do believe that this is the case where Mickelson, his commentary, and then the subsequent public backlash. I think that's been a really interesting aspect of this whole saga, is how players get leaked or get suspected, and they pull back immediately because they see the repercussions coming. Like the most recent case would be Bubba. Bubba is leaked as a player that's doing it, and then all of a sudden he's tweeting out his schedule out of nowhere, asking people where he should play. You know, this is a, it's a very, that's what I think is a compelling, you know, subplot. And whenever this whole thing, the dust settles and all the stories come out, you know, 20 years from now when there's documentaries about this or big pieces where everybody talks freely, they aren't afraid of public backlashes. I think a lot of people were going, and what happened with Phil and the subsequent events that occurred quickly after that are what scared a lot of people out of away.
He said 30% or 15 of the top 50 players in the world were committed prior to Mickelson's comments. I mean, that's a sizable number. Now they're saying 15 of the top 100 are committed to the London event. So, and as we highlighted last week, top 100 can give 15 of that could give you a wide range of outcomes, whereas 15 of the top 50 is a little more
mean Dean
predictable. I could not get his name as I was thinking about that. I almost said a Burmeister. So yeah, he did not say how many of those 15 backed out after, but he said 15 of the top 50 were committed prior to Phil's comments. So, all right, nothing explosive, but sort of corroborates what we've understood the state of play to be both before and after. All right, that does it. Anything else on this Wednesday episode? Do we hit everything? Tee times are just out. I don't think people care about feature groups for Wells Fargo right now.
I read a really great article recently. It could be news about best potato recipes from a country club chef.
Hey, did you read?
But I don't know. Is this the right time in the show to bring it up?
Best potato recipes.
three great potato recipes.
I mean, I. Potatoes are a hard thing to F up, right? I mean, potatoes are just almost always fine and good to good or great.
You know, listen, I was trolling around doing prep for the show, and I didn't expect it, but I stumbled upon some prep that might make the missus happy in a future date when I bust out one of these potato recipes.
You go looking for golf content and you find a potato recipe. That's great. What an unexpected surprise. All right, that does it. Everyone enjoy your Wednesdays. We'll be back Friday with another episode of the Shotgun Start.